on this very special edition, 50th episode of the Step to the Mic podcast. Our guest is a very special one. Most know him as the host of the NFL Today on CBS or Inside the NFL on Showtime. He's in the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame and part owner of the Washington Nationals, but is best known on this podcast as a celebrated DeMatha grad. If you haven't figured out who we're talking about just yet, step into the mic today. James Brown, JB, thank you for taking a part of your day to spend it with us. We appreciate you.
Hey, Chris, so let me just say, I come to this podcast with a little bit of apprehension, that is, because you and Ted are so well-versed. So I tried to put my thinking cap on to make sure I can move with you guys so you all help a brother along, okay?
Sounds good to me. Let's start with baseball, because we know your Hall of Fame credentials with the NFL and your Hall of Fame credentials in Harvard as a basketball player and at DeMatha as well. But with baseball, it seems as if it's the sport where you don't have those Hall of Fame credentials, but you are involved with the Nationals. So how did that happen, and what inspired you to get involved with the Nationals?
And that's a great question, because what inspired me, Chris, to get involved with the Nationals is my love of baseball, which, by the way, was my first love, playing baseball. I played CYO baseball at St. John the Baptist de La Salle when I was living over in Northeast Washington, D.C., and was doing pretty well at that. As a matter of fact, when we got to the postseason, Chris and TJ, we were playing other teams up off of 16th Street in Northeast D.C., the Carter Barron facility up there, and it happened to be where I was starting to get a real groove going in baseball, hitting home run after home run. Morgan Wooten, the great coach at DeMatha, God bless him, he came over to watch the game that we were playing because of a great multiple sports star by the name of Steve Garrett, blue-eyed, blonde-haired guy who had a wicked array of pitches. And again, football, baseball, basketball, he wound up going to North Carolina Chapel Hill and starring there. The only reason I stopped playing baseball is in one of the practices, Steve Garrett was, I was at the batter's box, and Steve Garrett was throwing the pitches, and this is what happened in slow motion. The moment the ball left his hand, I knew it was a curveball. I said, okay, that curveball is coming at me, and it's going to break, you know, just a little bit here. Man, why is that curveball taking so long to break? And man, this curveball ain't going to break. And I dropped down into the dirt, and the moment I dropped into the dirt, the ball broke over the plate, right one. So I knew that I did not have the chutzpah to stand in there, so I gave up baseball. Morgan Wooten asked me to come to DeMatha to play baseball, but that summer is when I went to the basketball camp that he and Coach Joe Gallagher back in the day from St. John's ran, and the rest was history. I never played baseball again. But real quickly, baseball is in my family. My grandfather, God bless him, from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, had a baseball team that was not a part of the Negro League, but appropriately named the Hattiesburg Black Sox, on the other side of town in segregated Mississippi. And a lot of Negro leaguers came through there to play his team. Jim Mudcat, Grant Cool, Papa Bell, Ted Double Duty, Radcliffe, Hank Aaron, you name them, even Satchel Paige. So baseball is in our family DNA, and it was my first love. And that's how I got involved with the Nationals, when they learned of my love for the game of baseball.
JB, that's fantastic. You know, it seems that you could have started almost any sport, but you turn your love to basketball. You end up at DeMatha High School, and you become one of the premier players here in the D.C. area. How did you cut your chops in this D.C. area to become one of the, you know, now one of the iconic players to ever come through our esteemed institution?
Well, let me tell you something. The layers and layers of phenomenal basketball players that the Washington, D.C. area has turned out, you know, I'm certainly much further down the list. But in the years that I played at DeMatha, the last 2 years especially, I was blessed to be a high school All-America and recruited by a number of colleges, which was quite humbling, to say the least. But my love grew And I know Morgan Wootten rightfully gets a lot of credit, a Hall of Famer himself, the first, I believe, inductee into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame solely for what he did at the high school level was phenomenal, the winningest high school basketball coach. But it was at Backus Junior High School, called middle school now, but Backus Junior High School, and the coach, Don Fugel, who was a coach there, who had some great players that came out of this area, older guys like Kermit Washington, who played with the Lakers, Adrian Dantley, of course, Hall of Famer, Randolph Apple Milam, a part of those great historical McKinley Tech powerhouse basketball teams, not only one of the greatest in Washington, D.C. history, but one of the finest basketball programs for 2 or 3 years running nationally. So I went, once I went to Morgan Wootten and Joe Gallagher's basketball camp, fellas, I worked on those fundamentals that they gave us on these fundamental sheets. I worked on them, you know, I mean, I was just nonstop dedicated to that. And that led me to having a great career and being selected as a DC Player of the Year in 1969. But again, a smaller player because all of our tall guys had graduated from the team that beat then Power Memorial High School, then named Luau Sindor, AKA Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, snapping their 71-game winning streak. I was in middle school listening to that game on radio, and all those guys had graduated by the time I became a junior or senior. So I had to play center at only 6'4", 6'4 and a half, zone defense, but we finished our senior year 27-3 because, again, we were extremely well-coached and very fundamentally sound.
JB, whenever you say the name Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he is my favorite athlete of all time, and it is my favorite interview I've ever had. I'll tell you this quick story. He told me about being in a ninth grade. I used to play basketball at the Harlem YMCA. It was the closest community center to me. He's like, oh, yeah, I did too, Chris. And I was like, what? He's like, I played Wilt Chamberlain one-on-one there when I was in the ninth grade, and I beat Wilt Chamberlain when I was in the ninth grade. And I was like, this is the greatest story I've ever heard. So whenever
hey,
I have
Chris,
someone like-
wait a minute. So Kareem didn't add any yeast to that story? He beat Wilt Chamberlain one-on-one when he was in the ninth grade?
That's what he told me. Now, here's what I don't know how much I can use because we didn't have this on air, but he said, you know, Wilt couldn't shoot a free throw. So I just shot jumpers on him as a ninth grader. He couldn't stop me. That's according to Kareem. I don't know how true it is, but he seemed very adamant about it. And for this young man from Harlem, it was a huge story to hear.
Okay, I tell you what, and all of us are journalists now. I'm going to ask my assistant, Ashley Johnson, to fact check that one. And you know what? Because I did interview Kareem many years ago. And I'm glad to hear you had a great experience with him because when I was doing NBA work for CBS, and actually this is when I was working with the then named Washington Bullets, and we were going out to the West Coast for the Bullets to play the Lakers, and Kareem was about to break a scoring record of Jerry West. And my producer, and this is my first job in broadcasting that way, he said, look, I want you to interview Kareem and I want to find out what his thoughts are about the record that he's about to break of Jerry West. And this is a powerful lesson for a then young broadcaster. So I'm asking Kareem, and they told me Kareem can be kind of moody. So I had 3 pages of notes ready for him and questions. And as I'm talking to him about the game and the impending record he's about to break, Chris and TJ, he's giving me 1, 2, 3, 4 word answers. You know, I mean, because he just wasn't into that. He said, well, you know what? I'll have time to think about that afterwards. Right now, my focus is on winning the game here. It's all about team. And he meant that. But when I asked him about his movie role in the movie Airplane with his movie hero, Robert Stack, just like TJ, Ted, you know, Jeffries is laughing and smiling, he opened up. He was effusive in his answers. He loved talking about that. Well, it didn't take a mental giant spend time talking about that. And he was expansive in his answers. My producer gets back in my ear and says, go back to the question about Jerry West. And the moment I did that, he went right back to 1, 2, 3 word answers. So the point is, I learned the lesson. You find a common point of interest, you wax poetic with that, and then you can slip in some other questions, but make it a conversation. So I'm glad you had that kind of experience with him.
Well, you just switched my next question because I was going to ask you about Elgin Baylor, but since you told us a story about Kareem in your time with the Washington Bullets, I need to fact check you on this, because I read that you were selling, you were working in the business world for Xerox before you had that opportunity. How in the world do you go from the business world in Xerox to working in the NBA covering the Washington Bullets? Please explain that to me.
Hey, and a very good question, Chris. You know, the pretext of that is I wanted to play in the NBA. That was my dream. And we can talk about this perhaps later, but one of the biggest mistakes I made in my life was forgetting a lesson that my high school coach, Morgan Wooden, taught all of his athletes in terms of if you want to get better. He said, there is absolutely no such thing as standing still. You're either getting better or you're regressing. So what kind of time are you going to put into it? Look, I didn't think I was this way, but I know when I got to college, in effect, I must have gotten complacent, resting on my laurels. I still played summer ball and all, but the question is, was I practicing and working on fundamentals a proper way and getting better like Adrian Dantley did? And I did not. So when I got cut by the Atlanta Hawks, even though the coach told me years later he should have kept me, and that certainly made me feel good, the finger of blame was on me, Ted Jeffries and Chris Miles. It was on me for not having worked hard to stay on top as I did to get to the top. And I vowed I would never allow that to happen again in a game of life. So even though I was working in local government, I still wanted to find something that I could find some satisfaction and passion in. And when I got an opportunity to audition for the job of the Washington Bullets, even though I was working at Xerox, Xerox was an excellent training ground because their sales training was recognized as one of, if not the best in all of the country in corporate America. And part of that is what you and TJ are doing, interviewing, because you have to go in, strike up a conversation with the possibility of a sale, be able to ask the right questions, understand when you've got somebody really interested, and to deliver the closing line, can you get the business? All of that transferred and translated so nicely to the world of broadcasting, because it's about what you guys are doing, asking the right questions. And even as you did here, you got an answer that you locked in on and went that route, as opposed to maybe whatever the prescribed questions were going to be that you'll still get back to, but you dove and delved a little more deeply into that. And that's what I learned at Xerox. And that's what translated so well in the world of broadcasting.
JB, I want to take it back a step. You know, you talk about, we know about your ascension to Harvard and a Hall of Fame player. Coming out of DeMatha, as I mentioned, you know, you were one of the greatest players to come through there during that time and still to today. So when I look at your career and your options, I know that they were plentiful because of the player that you were. How did you end up at Harvard University, which some might say, and I believe if memory stands correct, you had options at Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Notre Dame?
So, wow, TJ, great question. And also great story in terms of hopefully what people will get out of this is a life lesson. That's exactly right. And I did go visit those schools. However, the focus and the mantra that my mother and father, God bless them, were driving home to the five of us kids, I'm the oldest, was that academic success will ensure success in the game of life. So go to the best school that you can that still speaks to your passion with basketball and everything, but understanding life success is what's very important. And oh, by the way, that's what Tommy Amaker, former great basketball player from this area, Duke and the pros, is driving home with his scholar athletes at Harvard, is life success. What's going to happen the next 40 years after that? So that's what I was focused on. Now, Bill Bradley, the former senator from New Jersey and who played with the New York Knicks and Princeton, when I watched him in college and saw how Princeton was routinely in the NCAA tournament, and here these are scholar athletes doing it, I'm saying, wow, that's what my parents have been teaching me. Well, if I can get into an Ivy League school, I'd like to try to do that. And had I seen a letter from Princeton on Coach Morgan Wooten's desk first, that might have been the route that I wanted to go because of Bill Bradley. But I saw a letter from Harvard. And I said, if I can get in there, then that's where I'd like to go. And they had a great class of us coming up there, even though they don't give out athletic scholarships. And be clear, my parents certainly could have used that with over 200 scholarship offers. And I'm going to go to a school where they've got to pay whatever they could to do it. But it was because of what my parents talked about. Success in the game of life is what's going to matter in the long run. And that's why, TJ, I opted to go to a school like Harvard once I found out that I could get in and to take advantage of that. And to Jeffries, if I had to do it over again, I'd still do the same thing, because everything my parents said and other folks who mattered to me in life, Clifford Alexander, Harvard graduate, Yale Law School, he was Secretary of the Army in the Carter administration, and a Jewish builder here in town by the name of Barrett Lindy, they kept stressing the importance. And I know people made a big deal of me going up on Capitol Hill to talk to one of the Kennedy family members, Ted Kennedy, Senator Ted Kennedy. But it was what my parents told me and what those two Harvard alums told me that steered me there. Even though after I had shaken hands with the people of Harvard, a week later, I get a letter from UCLA. They're the powerhouse. And I said, Mom, I got a letter from UCLA. And she said, well, what does that mean? I said, what does it mean? I've got to go for an interview. Now I'm adding yeast to the story with the grammar. You ain't got to go nowhere. You're going to go where you shook the hands and gave them your word. Your word is your bond. And I would do it again.
JB, I just got to ask this question. As I look at that, though, in comparison, Harvard is Harvard. It's an Ivy League school. So Notre Dame, though, in its own right, is a great academic institution. I don't know the quality of basketball at that time, so forgive me for being such a, you know, so ignorant in that fact. But I imagine that they, you know, enough of the academics stood out. Carolina was not at that time the academic institution that it has grown to become, but obviously a history of basketball success. You being as affable as you are right now, do you think you could have had a similar trajectory to your success where you have arisen to had you not gone to Harvard and maybe gone to Notre Dame or Chapel Hill?
That, you know what, that is an excellent hypothetical to ask, Ted Jeffries. I buy what you're saying. I would like to believe clearly, I don't know how that would have turned out, but I would like to think that it would have been. And you're right, you characterize that perfectly. UNC Chapel Hill, an excellent school, and even academically, they were strong then. Coach John Thompson, God bless him, from Georgetown, the father, in a number of ways patterned himself after Dean Smith and the North Carolina program, because he was impressed with how the overwhelming majority of the graduates of the Tar Heel State, that school, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, went on to success in a game of life. So there was that opportunity there. You paint the picture perfectly for Notre Dame, the excellent combination of academics and athletics. Absolutely. Harvard at the time, we had a great recruiting class of at least three high school All-Americas, three or four All-Staters. We were a powerhouse potential, operative word, potential. And that year when I played, freshmen were not allowed to play on the varsity. Our freshman team was ranked the number two freshman team in the country behind, and certainly Chris Miles would know this, behind St. John's of New York. So we certainly had the opportunity, but we collectively, and certainly as one of the team leaders, me, failed my teammates by not leading by example to do what I did at a very challenging time, but that's an excuse. And we could have been a phenomenal team. Preseason, we were ranked in my sophomore year, number 11 in the country. It may have been as high as 10, but number 11. So the opportunity was there, but we didn't capitalize on it. And I take a lot of that responsibility. And that's why I vowed in terms of what I was going to do in the game of life after that to never make that mistake again, Ted and Chris. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned the late, great John Thompson in part of what you were talking about there. And when I think of one of his most recent quotes from the great book by Jesse Washington, I Came as a Shadow, which he said, oh, Elgin Baylor, greatest basketball player in DC history. Then you go 2, 3, 4. Then you start your list again. What do you make of Big John saying that as his assessment of Elgin Baylor, someone you looked up to?
So, and I say this with all degree of humbleness, humility, and understanding how others would have maybe some other people up at number one or whatever. And for all of us who know Adrian Dantley, whose place in history is secure. But when it comes to Elgin Baylor, yes, sir. The man was phenomenal. When I would go, I would, when I worked, when I went to as a participant and then as a coach and a part of the staff there at Morgan Wooten and Joe Gallagher's Metropolitan Area Basketball Camp, we would show old film of NBA players. Elgin Baylor was the real deal. You don't go and play at the NBA level and average 35 points and whatever was 15, 18 rebounds at
18.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, that's even better. You don't do that as a 6'5 forward. The rabbit was the deal. And I don't think you're going to find many people to argue with that. I had a chance to interview him about 2 years ago. 2.5, 3 years ago, and it was one of the best experiences I had. So I certainly grieve with everybody else in the passing of Elgin Baylor. But Chris, the man, I can't say it enough. I agree with Big John Thompson. Red Auerbach taught me this. When people have these arguments about players that they consider to be the greatest of all time, I prefer to do what Red Auerbach told me. That's a hard one to say. Even I understand I'm throwing Michael Jordan into the mix. What he did, make no mistake about it. Elgin was doing the same kind of thing back in the day. Red Auerbach says he prefers to talk about great players in a given era because a great player from any era would be a great player in any era as well too. You can't tell me that Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor, Will Chamberlain, you can't tell me that they wouldn't be successful in today's game because a great player would be great in any era.
JB, when we talk about greatness, we represent the DMV here on this show. Mm. You hail from the Mecca, as I call it. We all call it. We have worn the honor of honors, have gone through the Matha Catholic High School in Hyattsville. You had some epic battles with a particular DC school, McKinley Prep at the time. Can you talk about those battles during your time of playing against McKinley?
Hey, so Ted Jeffries, first of all, as I try to be in terms of observing, I was just watching your co-anchor here to see if he was grieving or agreeing with you in terms of the Stellar DeMatha program, knowing that he went to Rice in New York City and they were one of the powerhouses. Their history is pretty doggone significant as well too, in terms of players that they've turned out. And we know New York City has layers upon layers upon layers because of its size of some outstanding ball players. And many of us nationally would compare whether or not we have arrived as an area against New York City. So anyway, but Chris gave you his props. He just smiled and just listened to you with respect to that. So now that I've said all that, McKinley Technical High School. Hey, Ted Jeffries. They are, and DeMatha's history is encapsulated in stone. There's no doubting how great that program has been and still is in terms of what they're continuing. But McKinley Tech was one of the finest high school basketball programs in the country for about a 2 or 3 year running period. Phenomenal, great talent there. They had, I don't know whether they called them, and I may be misrecalling whether they were the Magnificent Seven, the Magnificent Six. They were awesome. They had two guys in the middle, Michael Bazard, Big Tim Bassett, played professionally. Two wings, Ronnie Hogue, played at the University of Georgia, great ball player, a cup of tea in the pros, Randolph Apple Milam, and they had a guard, 5'7", Kevin Tatum, who was Monty Tau or Spud Webb before there was. He was awesome. Their great six man coming off of the bench. We just called him Nehru. They were awesome. And my senior year, when it was the big battle between DeMatha and McKinley Tech, that senior year, 1969, I was blessed to be The DC Player of the Year. We had an excellent team of fundamentally sound guys. We played them when we were at full strength at the University of Maryland Classic. I think they called it the M Classic, out of then Coalfield House. McKinley Tech beat us handily. They were tough. Then the number one ranking in the Washington, D.C. area came out at the end of the regular season. And McKinley Tech was number one, properly so. But we played the Knights of Columbus postseason tournament and worked all the way through the early rounds, got to where DeMatha and McKinley were going to meet again in the championship. Everybody and their mother was going to be at that game. All kinds of visibility about it. I actually passed out from physical exhaustion because of the recruiting pressure that I was going through at that time, and had gone to the hospital, and the coach and the doctors were not going to allow me to come back and to play. I sneak out of the hospital to go over to Catholic University and sit in the stands unbeknownst to people and watch that game. Everybody assumed McKinley was going to smoke DeMatha. And in that game, my colleagues, they played phenomenally and beat McKinley handily. So the Washington Post made DeMatha the number one team in the area. This is at, and the McKinley fans railed, properly so, because they were the best team in the area. And this is no slight, you know, no smack on my team and the DeMatha, a legend, if you will, that the program is. McKinley Tech was the best team in the Washington, D.C. area, period. And they should have been number one that year. They ultimately were put back at number one, and they were phenomenal. So I have nothing but huge respect for the McKinley Tech program.
You know, the exuberance that you just had telling that story makes sense for this reason. I had a friend of mine, and you might know him as 3D these days, but when you covered him, he was Dennis Scott. And he showed me an old clip
of him dunking. Jump shooting Dennis Scott. Go ahead.
So we're good friends now. He showed me a clip from you talking about one of his high school games. I was like, hold on. The guy who holds the record for most Super Bowl pregame shows, JB, I was like, he did your high school stuff? He's like, man, it was awesome. We knew he was great then, but you see where he is now. Chris, stay focused, stay focused. I'm like, all right, 3D, okay. But when you hear a story like that of a guy that was a high school student that you covered and you had that same energy, that same effort to where you are now covering the Super Bowl 10 different times hosting the pregame show, how does that make you feel inside as a broadcaster to know that a guy who had a long career in the NBA, who was the ACC Player of the Year at Georgia Tech, he's just excited to say your name as a broadcaster?
You know what? My daughter has told me to retire this expression. She said, Daddy, it's overworked. But what that makes me do, I said, I'm too dark to blush, but I am blushing because to hear that from Dennis Scott, hey, TJ and Chris, when I started in broadcasting here in local TV and had a television, you know, a show on Channel 9, my high school coach, Morgan Wooten, and I was intent on covering high school sports the way that I remember it when I was a youngster, when high school sports were huge. And, you know, it was getting overlooked. So Coach and I hosted a show called Fast Break. And we focused on high school sports. And look, I mean, whether it was Christy Winters, who went on to basketball fame, and now you see what she's doing in broadcasting, and so many others from H.D. Woodson High School over in far northeast D.C., Coach Bob Hedden had a women's program that was still is phenomenal, whether it was Dennis Scott, whether it was a Tommy Amaker, whether it was Grant Hill. We turned out some great players in this area, Danny Ferry and the whole nine yards. So it was exciting to see that they followed it, and it makes me feel good that someone like Dennis would recognize that we put our heart and passion into that. And there were always the debates, man, you guys are showing favoritism towards the Catholic League, man. In a high, we got some serious action, but we covered it all because there were some great ball players. Sherman Douglas over at Spingarn High School, there were some great players. So we tried to cover the area, and we loved the arguments as well as those who supported what we were saying, because high school sports certainly is very worthy of that, Chris. Absolutely.
JB, let's stay right there when we talk about greatest players coming out of the DMV. For this audience, please identify in high school and in the college ranks, who was the toughest guy that you had to go against that gave you fits on the basketball court? Or were there any?
In the D.C. area?
In the D.C. area.
McKinley Tech clearly, quickly comes to mind. Mackin High School. You know where there's a coach, his name is Coach Butch McAdams, graduated the same year as I did. And he's got, you know, a show as well too. Coach McAdams, he knows this area like one of the previous guys here, Glenn Harris, mm-hmm. old timers, you know, like us, who know the area well in the history of it. And they can certainly speak to this. But McKinley Tech, unquestionably, Mackin High School. And there are a number of younger players who went on from there as well too. But I think back to the great Austin Carr and guys who played there, Tom Little, the great shooters. St. John's gave us a good run for the money as well too. So we had some great talent in the area. And in the public high schools, look, we didn't play against them, but my college teammate at Harvard, Floyd Lewis, who went to Western High School, phenomenal player. So there were some great individual players and great teams from the high school area here in Washington as well too. But we handled our own pretty good, and I'm extremely thankful, and I take nothing for granted, and am not speaking in any way slighting any other program, because we had some serious battles. But certainly Mackin High School comes to mind very quickly, and McKinley Tech instantly, one of the all-time greats, yes.
Was there an individual player though?
Individual player who might have been tough for me in that regard. And this cannot come off as even feigned humility, because I can't really think of anybody I had difficulty against other than, you know, James Garvin. And that's a name that many people may not recall. He went to Phelps High School, the vocational high school, mm-hmm. a leaping son of a gun. Matt Gant, who went to Gwynn Park, and he went on to play at the college level with St. Bonaventure with Big Bob Lanier. Man, he could jump out of the gym. These were phenomenal players. So those couple, anybody who could leap like that, that probably caused me a little bit of difficulty. But other than that, I can't think of anybody, you know, except the entire McKinley Tech team that I was talking about, because they were really phenomenal. Cardozo had Big Mike Jackson and Donnell Bullock. So those teams are pretty good. So yeah, I can mention some of those players, usually the big guys, because hey, at 6'4 and a half, I'm going against guys who were 6'7, 6'9, 6'10, 6'11. So I had to kind of bring them out high and try to go by them, you know, to do my thing there. So,
mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, before you get started, you can always tell how good a player was when there was very few in the entire DMV that you can say gave you fits. That means you are a flat out dog on the basketball court. But go ahead, Chris.
The other side of the coin could be your boy's having a little difficulty trying to remember. So in defense of those other players who might be watching your show and say, man, how come JB didn't mention me, man? He knows I stopped him flat. Hey, charge it to the head and not the heart on that one. So, yeah.
You're too young for senior moments, JB. We know better.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, TJ, that's like when I saw Ron Artest last year and I like kind of said to him again, like, hey, remember when I was in high school and you dunked on our whole team? He's like, who'd you play with? I was like, Anthony Glover. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, he's not going to remember me. He might remember some of the other guys. JB is probably the Ron Artest of his era as compared to my era. JB, last question before we get you out of here. Nats opening day, you have a message that you want to make sure gets out there. When I think of the Washington Nationals, I always think of the Washington Homestead Grays. I think of Josh Gibson and all of those names, because they meant something to me before I even moved to the area. Then I found out, you know, that they were part of the history here, and shedding some light on that as well.
So my father and my uncle, and I may have already said this, they thought that I was going to be a baseball player, and they were so excited because of what you said. After the Washington Senators of the major leagues played, the black folk would go to watch the Homestead Grays play over there on the old Griffith Stadium grounds where Howard University Hospital is. And the players were phenomenal. As a matter of fact, I had enough opportunity to talk to a number of the old Negro Leaguers. And one of the reasons, even though they were absolutely being slighted by not being, you know, a part of the major leagues, period, because of segregation, because of racism, they didn't feel as if they were second-class citizens. They felt, to a man almost, they had the better talent. And when you hear a lot of the stories, while we do hear folks who maybe have added a little yeast to the story, I believe it was Ted Double Duty Radcliffe, who they said was so fast. And you know what? And as ball players, you all know this. Everybody adds some yeast to the story. Man, that brother was so fast. He'd go in the hotel room. He cut the light switch off, and he'd be in bed before it got dark, you know. But, hey, those cats could flat outplay. Satchel Paige, his hesitation pitch, which was so effective when he was playing in the Negro Leagues, when he came to the major leagues in his 40s, he still had that effective hesitation pitch, so much so they outlawed it and said he was balking on the mound. He played when he was age 59 and struck out the first three batters and such and such. So when you talk about the talent, there's no yeast in that story. If you go to the Negro League Baseball Hall of Fame and just read, and now it's important that the statistics that were compiled during that time need to be included in the record books. If it means rewriting the record books, it's writing a wrong, because those players were phenomenal. And it was not unusual for you to see Ted Double Duty. When they say Double Duty, he was a pitcher and a catcher. He played two ways. So you had a number of guys like that. And even as I was sharing my thoughts about Jackie Robinson, unquestionably, he is those who stand on his shoulders. And we all know he wasn't the best player to come out of the major leagues. I mean, the Negro Leagues. He was the best suited to deal with what he was dealing with, but there were legions of other players who were flat out phenomenal. And my grandfather used to tell me about the great stars, as I may have shared, who came through Hattiesburg to play against his team, which wasn't a part of the Negro League, as I was mentioning, but, you know, it was a black baseball team appropriately called the Hattiesburg Black Sox, to see Cool Papa Bell, as we mentioned before, and some of these other great people come through there. They saw phenomenal heroics game in and game out. And it's so great and excellent that finally they're being acknowledged.
Yeah, fact about Jackie Robinson, he was actually a great basketball player in college, and his baseball stats were at best pedestrian in college. So to see him become the Hall of Fame legendary player that he is, it's very interesting once you learn that background on him. JB, I'm glad that when you ducked outside of the batter's box, that you decided to become a great broadcaster, become a Hall of Fame basketball player at Harvard, a Hall of Fame broadcaster. What is it, 2016 Pete Rozelle Award, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Much continued success to you. Can't wait to hear what you have to say on Nats opening day. Thanks for stepping to the mic.
I get a chance, and I'm blessed to be with you and TJ again, which I relish that opportunity. We'll talk about how phenomenal that is, because here's a guy in the first football game ever that I called. Thank God it was only going to the local, like a 7-Eleven store. It was a Piggly Wiggly down there and a TV truck. I said that one of the football players was tackled on the 60-yard line in an NFL game. So don't think that I'm not humbled and thanking the good Lord for longevity in the sport and to create a record like that. That is supernatural. But thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks for being on with us, JB. We really appreciate you.